evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 23rd, 2018. The UN Human Rights Commission releases a report saying top military commanders in South Sudan may have committed war crimes.
We've identified several South Sudanese officials who may bear individual responsibility for serious violations of human rights and international crimes committed since 2013. As is customary with UN reports, we do not name these individuals.
And a South African citizen was sentenced to death by a hanging today in Juba.
He wasn't allowed any witnesses. If we could be fair in with the trial, and if we could obviously lift the death penalty, that's a big one that's hanging over our heads. And if he could be extradited to South Africa, then to be faced, with charges or a court trial, we'll go through that all again.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Commission on Human Rights says it has identified more than 40 senior military officials who may be responsible for war crimes and crimes against humanity. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, where the UN investigators released their findings today.
UN investigators detail evidence of horrific abuses in South Sudan as a civil war in that country stretches into its fifth year.
This old woman recounts how the soldiers were discussing whether they should kill her or leave her. And one of the soldiers said, "She's just an old woman. Why don't you let her go?" And the other one said, "No, she belongs to a different tribe. We should kill her."
That is Yasmin Soka, the chairman for the UN-backed Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan. The commission's 132-page report documents cases of abduction, torture, killing and sexual violence, including gang rape and boys being forced to rape family members. The commission holds more than 40 senior military officials, including three state governors, responsible.
We've identified several South Sudanese officials who may bear individual responsibility for serious violations of human rights and international crimes committed since 2013. As is customary with UN reports, we do not name these individuals.
Calls to South Sudan's government spokesman, defense minister, and other officials for comment went unanswered. The UN Commission says it has gathered sufficient evidence to show abuses perpetrated by all sides, but that most of the atrocities were committed by government forces. The UN investigators concentrated on the recent fighting in the eastern and central Equatoria, Bahr al-Ghazal and Upper Nile regions. Those regions have witnessed an increase in violence since the collapse of the peace deal in mid-2016. The commission says it collected 230 victim testimonies and employed other means of investigation.
For instance, we got a lot of satellite footage, and in the satellite footage we were able to identify, I think something like 18,000 homes had been built in an area. You know, you can have a before and you have an after. So that's another tool that you use. The other is sort of records that people keep of the battle. You also interview many combatants. And remember, in South Sudan, people have changed sides so much that depending on which side they're supporting, they're willing to give you information about what's happened.
The commission's plan is to turn their report over as evidence to a hybrid court that will prosecute abuses by all parties in South Sudan. The African Union and South Sudanese government agreed to set up the hybrid court as part of the 2015 peace deal. However, the tribunal is yet to be established. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan in Focus repeatedly contacted the SPLA spokesperson, Brigadier General Rule Roy Kong, Defense Minister Kwal Manyang, and Information Minister Michael Makui for reaction to this story. All the three failed to answer their phones. The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway are condemning last week's action by the National Security Service to break up a youth civil society meeting on the High-Level Revitalization Forum in Addis Ababa. Youth representatives who attended phase two of the forum were briefing their colleagues on the developments in Addis Ababa when security personnel burst in and shut down the meeting. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
Wani Michael Executive Director of the OK Africa Foundation, says dozens of youth leaders representing various organizations were being briefed on the forum inside the office of the Jubek State Women's Union when they were suddenly told to leave.
It was almost mid of the discussion. We received two gentlemen from the security sector and identified themselves as people coming from the national security. So they came and ordered our event to be closed because they said we did not get approval from the National Security Political Department.
Participant Bonjiri Peter says the discussion became a bit raucous between various youths when security agents decided to break up the meeting.
They said that it is not approved, so it should not go ahead. I think this must not be a justification. If the security deemed it as unhealthy discussion, that would be right. But if it is just a stop because it is not approved, then they are limiting our civic space, which is wrong completely.
In a statement released on Thursday, the Troika countries condemned the move by security personnel to disrupt the meeting. Mark Weinberg is Public Affairs Officer at the United States Embassy in Juba.
We find this kind of action to intimidate civil society and limit the flow of information surrounding the peace process unacceptable and counterproductive. We note that the participants were meeting with the forum's youth representative, an officially recognized stakeholder of the High-Level Revitalization Forum and signatory to the December 21st Cessation of Hostilities Agreement.
A coalition called the South Sudan Civil Society Forum also condemned the act, saying it goes against South Sudan's constitution, which guarantees citizens the right to peaceful assembly. Michael says a national security official called to apologize today.
They called me and said sorry for what happened. They say these people did not get any order from the office and they acted on their own. And right now they're investigating the two officials who have come to close our event, and we really thank the authorities of the national security for picking up this issue.
Weinberg says citizens' rights, including those negotiating for peace, must be protected.
We reiterate the critical importance of the High-Level Revitalization Forum parties creating a conducive environment for peacemaking, and once again call on all parties to make good on their promises to implement the cessation of hostilities, which includes provisions on protecting the rights of civilians and ensuring the protection of civil society.
In its statement, the Troika says South Sudan's people deserve peace and urge the government of South Sudan to respect the rights of its citizens and to recognize the positive role civil society groups play in the country. Nabil Biagio, VOA News, Juba.
A high court judge in South Sudan today sentenced a South African citizen, William John Andley, to death by hanging after finding him guilty of espionage, illegal entry into South Sudan, and conspiracy to overthrow President Salva Kiir's government. Andley worked for rebel leader Riek Machar as security advisor. And as we hear from Waki Simon Wudu from Juba, he was arrested in August in 2016, days after fighting fled between government forces and Riek Machar's bodyguards.
At the end of William John Andley's five-month trial, presiding judge Lado Ermenio read his final ruling in Arabic and a court official translated it into English.
Al-Idam Shangan Hatta
Al-Mot. The accused is sentenced to death by hanging for having contravened provisions of Section 67 of South Sudan Criminal Procedures Act and Section 57 of South Sudan National Security Act.
Judge Ermenio says Andley will have to first serve two consecutive prison terms of 9 years and 4 months, respectively, after which he will be hanged. Andley has 15 days to appeal. Court says Andley served at the rank of Major General while working for Machar's SPLA-IO and that Andley came to Juba with Machar from Pagak in 2016 when Machar became a first vice president. The prosecution also told the court that Andley procured firearms and ammunition and helped the rebel movement with military expertise, which, according to the court, is a violation of South Sudan National Security Act 2014 and South Sudan's Criminal Procedure Act of 2008. Judge Ermenio said Andley's actions endangered state security and South Sudan's economy. And Lee's defense lawyer, Gar Adel, strongly rejected the court's ruling.
In the beginning, the accused, when the first lawyer withdrew the instruction, the accused supposed the state has to assign a lawyer temporarily until the accused get a lawyer, but he has attended two sessions without a lawyer. When I came in, I lodged an application so that I am given time to talk to my client and to familiarize myself with the records. The court refused.
Endless first defense team was led by Monyulua Kwol Alor, who withdrew from the case a month ago, arguing that Endless should be freed under Article 8 of the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement signed in December, which requires South Sudan's warring parties to release prisoners of war and political detainees. Endley Fasti appeared in court in October last month with the co-defendant James Gadet Dak, Machar's former spokesman. 2 weeks ago, the court sentenced Gadet to hanging, sparking immediate condemnations from national and international human rights groups. UNMISS Chief David Sierra condemned the death sentences for Endley and Gadet.
The UN, the United Nations, has a very firm view and very firm policy that we do not support the death penalty.
Adel says he will file an appeal on behalf of his client and describes the sentence as a miscarriage of justice.
He said, and it was bound to happen, because the court chooses to be incompetent and partial in the process from the onset, which has occasioned the miscarriage of justice that we have just witnessed. And not only that, it has also offended the procedural and substantive law of the nation.
For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The family of William Endley says they are shocked by the South Sudan High Court's decision. Charmaine Endley is William's sister. She says the government of South Sudan should pardon her brother and cancel the death sentence.
We are devastated. We didn't expect this, and we're feeling very tired emotionally. We're really feeling flat and we're feeling so helpless as well.
Any word from the South African mission in Juba? I mean, have they told you anything?
No, we haven't had any information from the government. The only information as a family we've received is from Advocate Gore, who's the attorney attending to my brother's case. Nobody else has issued any statements or anything. We're still waiting for that.
Have you contacted the government? Have you made your feelings known to the government in Johannesburg?
We have got hold of them telephonically, and we advised them we're very concerned, and they said they would be issuing a statement to the family. They were just waiting for some information to come back.
And since your brother was arrested, what kind of help were you getting from the South African government on this case?
Well, basically, we felt in the beginning that we weren't getting enough assistance. Then they were able to help us to establish that he was still alive, and there was some forms of assistance offered to us when he was ill, and we were able to send in money to him and get parcels to him, and I was receiving telephonic calls from him as well. And they were issuing me with regular updates and reports, which we were quite satisfied with. But I'm hoping, and I'm trying to keep positive at this stage, that now once all of this has come to the fore and the case has now been finalized, is that they're going to come on board and give us the assistance that we're asking for.
And what kind of assistance are you asking for at this time?
Basically, we'd like them to intervene, and obviously we feel that the death penalty is very unfair, and we're disputing a lot of the charges that he's been found guilty of. The advocates found the entire court proceedings to be very unfair, and we basically would like them to have the death penalty lifted, and then from there with the appeal we would love first part for him to be extradited back to South Africa.
When he left South Africa to South Sudan, do you know what he was doing in South Sudan?
He was basically working as an advisor to Riek Machar, and he was involved in the signing of the peace treaty in 2013, and he continued with Riek Machar, and My brother was involved with trying to coordinate the forces of Riek Machar into the South Sudanese army. So that's what he was doing, and he was receiving no monetary payments or anything from Riek Machar. His family and you know, us at home were taking a lot of financial strain for the past few years because he wasn't actually earning any money.
If you are given an opportunity to meet with South Sudanese authorities or speak to them straight, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to please, if we could be fair. He wasn't allowed any witnesses. If we could be fair with the trial, and if we could obviously lift the death penalty, that's a big one that's hanging over our heads. And if he could be extradited to South Africa, then to be faced, with charges or a court trial, we'll go through that all again. But if he could be in our hands and obviously have better care, because he's on nearly three occasions, he's nearly lost his life due to malnutrition. He's been very ill. He hasn't been in a good condition. So we would prefer him to be extradited to South Africa. I would plead with them to do that.
That's Charmaine Enley, sister of William Enley, a South African citizen who was sentenced to death by hanging today in Juba. She was speaking to me from Cape Town, South Africa. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Pope Francis prays for South Sudan and Democratic Republic of Congo. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
have you ever had to deal with a bully? What did you do?
When I was in lower primary, we had pupils who were bullies. They would offend you or try to attack you or provoke you or mock you. For personally, I ignored the bully. I just ignore them and they will stop.
I do just ignore. I see them as if they have not done anything to me. I've never responded to what they do. And sometimes you might look at it as if the person is just trying to talk to him or herself. That's how I've ever dealt with bullying in school.
Just ignore it. Ignore that person. That person so rash on you, you just take it easy. And yeah, just like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Pope Francis has invited Catholics and members of all other religious groups today to observe a day of prayer and fasting and initiatives for peace, urging everyone to say no to violence and conflict, dedicated in particular to South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The pontiff's message comes as the Catholic charity Caritas warns of a major humanitarian emergency in the DRC, where it says this year we'll see 2.2 million children suffering from severe acute malnutrition. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Pope Francis asked that the special day be offered specifically for the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan, inviting both non-Catholics and non-Christians to join in the ways they deem most appropriate. The Pope said that while prayer is always an effective resolution, more can be done. Francis said each person can concretely say no to violence, to the extent that it depends on him or herself, because victories obtained with violence are false victories, while working for peace does good for all. Hundreds of Congolese and South Sudanese answered the Pope's call Friday by attending special masses both at home and abroad. Pope Francis planned to visit South Sudan and the DRC last year, but he was forced to postpone his trip due to ongoing conflict. South Sudan's conflict began in 2013 as a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, who was Kiir's deputy. The war has driven 2 million people from the country and left more than 1 million others a step away from famine, according to the United Nations. The situation in both countries has deteriorated with increasing violence. In the DRC, Catholic charity Caritas predicts that 2.2 million children will suffer from severe acute malnutrition this year, and 13.1 million people will need aid in order to survive. Michel Roy is the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis.
The UN are not able to gather enough resources to be able to face the immediate problems of these people who are dying of lack of food, who are dying of lack of medicine. The situation is really a terrible one.
Ross says the people are in dire need of stability and humanitarian intervention. Elections are not being held due to the violence and existing insecurity. But Ross says this is the status quo that those in power want to maintain. And he says the international community is not doing its part either.
It seems it's not in the interests of major powers that peace comes back in the Congo. The international powers are not engaging mainly for economic reasons. The Congo is very rich in natural resources of all kinds.
The solution to the DRC's current situation, Roy says, is political, but there appears to be a lack of will to change things. He adds that the country has only plunged into greater uncertainty since President Joseph Kabila refused to step down when Kabila's constitutional mandate expired in 2016.
We know what the solution is. The solution is a dialogue that will bring to new elections and to peace.
Congolese bishops have repeatedly appealed to the international community to aid the political process and urge nonviolent resistance at home. Using strong language, the country's bishops recently called on the entire population to take control of its own destiny by peaceful means. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
The Winter Olympics wraps up this weekend in Pyongyang, South Korea. South Sudan was not competing at the Games, but one of its citizens traveled to the Korean Peninsula to deliver a message of peace and solidarity. Yajpur Biel, a member of the refugee team from the 2016 Summer Olympics in Brazil, says the Olympics are the most competitive stages for the world's best athletes. He tells Ayen Bior the Olympic is also a chance to unite people from all countries.
We need to carry the message of hope to other people. Because we had a team of refugees who participated in 2016 Olympics, but because these people, they don't have nation, they don't have country, but they compete because of the solidarity of the Olympics. But now the same message is continued to carry by the Olympic movement to unite North Korea and South Korea to become together to have one team. When I was there in South Korea, it means a lot to me to tell other people the meaning of the peace. Being in the Olympic in South Korea, we are carrying the same message and to achieve the goal of the Olympic movement.
For the listeners who don't know, North Korea and South Korea had a unified team at the Winter Olympics. And from what you just said, I understand that you went there to support that unified North and South Korean team. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, the meaning of World Tragedy is to United people, the North Korea and South Korea, because this idea, it never happened in the world to have one team for different countries, because North Korea and South Korea, it was a different country. But apart from uniting the North Korea and South Korea, this opens friendship to other people who are coming from different countries, who are an athlete, because they need to know the meaning of Olympics. Because the Olympics, we call an Olympian is whereby it is to create peace and create fair play among the athletes who are competing. and to be in the, there, to be in South Korea is something whereby to unite these people and to tell them you can continue to carry the same meaning of friendship and peace to unite different people in this world.
What lessons did you bring to the table, being from South Sudan yourself?
The same message that I carry to South Korea and North Korea is also the one, especially our country, South Sudan. About more than 2.5 million there are refugees now, but seven people are in this place. But to end up this conflict or maybe the situation that we have in our country, we deserve that. First of all, we need peace. That is the reason whereby I continue to carry the same message to tell the world that we need peace. Peace is the fundamental of everything that we are doing as a human being. Without peace, you cannot prosper in everything that we are doing.
Poor, the next Summer Olympics will be in Tokyo in 2020. Can we expect you to be there?
Yeah, actually, that is my goal or my target. But we must have trials from the team on the refugee Olympic around the world.
And you're training right now in Nairobi?
Yeah, in Nairobi now I'm training. Integral Nairobi training camp. And I'm also in school studying public relations. And everything that as a human being doing, it requires a lot of time. It depends according to your achievement or maybe your hard work. And the situation that we are now, yeah, we as a people, we can change that situation. Especially young people who are refugees. Most of them are children and they are women. But if we cannot take this to be our mentally, something that can change our life, we cannot get basic needs that we are needing as a human being. But let's put our hand together to achieve something which will be called everlasting peace. Because nobody is wishing to be called a refugee.
That was Iach Poor Biel speaking to Ayen Biel from Tegla Lorupe's training center in Ngong, Kenya. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Malaika by the Freedom Boys.
Malaika, 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 Malaika.
We have been listening to the Freedom Boys with the song Malaika. I could hear Nana Nyardo. In Bari, it means I love you. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We would like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Have a restful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.